Hi, I'm Dawn.
And I'm Natasha, and this is On Behalf of All Women.
What if we were entering into a new time? A time when the very systems of control and commerce that we had believed to be the status quo were somehow no longer relevant. What if we were faced with a new medium? A new network. What if that time is now? Now.
A candid commentary on being a female entrepreneur. So welcome. This is our introductory episode.
Yeah, so we're excited to be here. We're excited. We hope you're really excited to listen.
Yeah, I mean, Don and I, we've been talking about this idea on and off for like the last year or so. And we just said, you know what, it would be really cool and if we could have a place where we could have candid conversation about some of the hilarious crap we've been through, some of the irritating stuff too, but just kind of map out our journey so that it's relevant to other female founders who are trying to launch their startups.
Yeah, and we finally pulled the trigger, and we're doing this podcast. So here we are.
Which is kind of funny because over the last couple of weeks we've been experimenting with, no, maybe we should do Facebook Lives. So if you caught our last Facebook Lives, I mean, we were all the way in it. Okay, we were in it sideways.
Yeah, it really was ridiculous. Yeah, we shot the whole thing sideways and put it up sideways. And there was actually someone who hung on the line with us the whole time. So,
God,
you know,
her.
if you're a founder or entrepreneur or you're a creative person, then you know that you rarely hit it right the first time. So
very, very true. And so we just want to be able to have intimate conversation here and really offbeat and fun interviews with female founders that we bring on and just have really candid conversations about what it's like behind the scenes to kind of really interact and navigate our way through startup land. Because this is the beginning, we thought, you know what, let's just talk a little bit about how we came together. It's funny because it seems like we're two crazy women who kind of had the idea to launch our own business and serve female entrepreneurs, but it was like we were coming at it from two different angles.
Yeah. And speak for yourself. We're one crazy woman and one really, really sane woman.
Oh,
that is me. Oh, but yeah, because I had always... I think I kind of knew I wanted to work for myself, but I started a coaching business, and I was doing life coaching, and I wanted to coach female entrepreneurs because I just love the creative energy. I loved helping people realize their dreams, which is why I went into coaching in the first place. But then there was this really interesting dynamic where I was attracting all these female entrepreneurs, and I just enjoyed working with them because I felt, well, if I help this person overcome their doubts, overcome their fears and their challenges, and help hold them accountable to their dream, they're going to create something amazing in the world. And so I was really, drawn to that.
Yeah, and Don had this, what was the language that you used earlier? It was kind of like she was working with the female entrepreneur from the inside.
Right, because at Lioness, we always say that we want to work on the whole entrepreneur. We want to help you work on yourself and your business. And so I was helping entrepreneurs work on themselves, so do that inner work. And then Natasha simultaneously was kind of building this business, helping people on the outside and working on the business itself.
Right. Right, right. And so it was like, you know, how do we give women information to really help them launch and scale their startups, you know, practical tools and resources to allow them to do that? And then obviously I really care about journalism and in-depth reporting and telling the stories of these women, because we know that their startups are underfunded. But more importantly, which was like the first aspect that I cared about, was that their startups were underexposed. You know, a lot of female entrepreneurs are not covered in, you know, media every day. You turn on, I think of your average business channel on MSNBC or CNBC and or even Bloomberg, they're not talking about a lot of female-founded startups. And right now we know that women are launching startups at a historic rate. And it was like, how can we tell their stories and really help their businesses grow and thrive? But so when we started publishing some of the news, it was funny. It was really organic. The women, they were responding to the news and the content, but they were also like, hey, we need help with this inner stuff, with the imposter syndrome and the confidence gap stuff. And that was so far out of my skill set and even realm of understanding, because those were new terms to me. But I knew that Dawn was running this successful, blossoming coaching practice. And not only that, she has the skills to coach and mentor these women. She can get on my nerves sometimes, but she is modest when it comes to her skill set as a CEO. But I knew that she had the skills to help me build and scale the company. So it, to me, it was just, I kept thinking about it, and I'm a person of faith, and I kept praying about it, and it was like, no, I really think that I'm supposed to ask this woman to merge our companies, you know?
Yeah, and it was interesting because Natasha did ask me, you know, one day I was at her house and she asked me, what she really asked me was to leave my business and to come run Lioness. And I was like, yeah, sure.
And it was so nonchalantly.
It was a real casual answer. And so I remember, I think she called me either later that night or the next day to say, hey, I don't think you really understood what I was asking you, because I'm asking you to basically, like, close your business and come run my business. And I was like, yeah.
I got this time, okay.
She still was like, what? But what she didn't know at the time, excuse me, was that I had been doing, as a coach, you try to practice what you preach. I do a lot of self-reflection, you know, spend time journaling and doing visioning and doing all that kind of good stuff. And I had some months prior been doing some visualization exercises, and I saw myself speaking to women. I knew I was running a business, but I wasn't a coach. Yeah, I wasn't running a coaching practice. And it kind of threw me because at the time I was building a coaching practice. But I thought, you know what, this vision is valid, and so I'm just going to prepare for it. I don't know what this other thing is going to be, but I'll recognize it when it comes. And so when she said this to me, I was like, oh, yeah, yes. I had been waiting and watching to see what this other adventure was going to be that was going to lead me to that picture that I had seen in the vision. And so I was prepared for that moment. So it threw Natasha off a little bit because I was just so agreeable.
This lady really is crazy.
Again, I do not own that. I don't own that. So so we talked a little bit as we really talked about what that would look like. And one of the things I love about the partnership with Natasha is we really talk through everything. And we started talking about what would this Lioness look like, and, you know, with me coming on. And then it was at that point we kind of realized it made more sense to have more of a merger than for me to completely abandon the coaching business, because I was serving female entrepreneurs, and Natasha had also been finding that these women wanted more of the coaching, more of the soft, what people would call soft skills, or, so that there was a demand for that. And so that's kind of how we came to be, the Lioness as it is today.
I just always find, like, you know, as you walk the entrepreneurship journey, I mean, so much is getting thrown at you when you think about, because it's like so much clearing that you have to do of, like, old energy and old baggage just to grow, to make room for the uncomfortable growth that has to happen. And I always think about, you know, just childhood and things that I want to do in my life. I mean, I don't reflect as much as Dawn, because Dawn is a reflector. Okay, she loves it. But, I mean, for yourself, what did you, so 7-year-old Dawn back in the day, Is this what you thought you'd be doing? What did you think you were going to do when you were a kid?
It's interesting. As a kid, I had a lot of interest. So at 7, I think I was sewing outfits for my Cabbage Patch dolls, you know. They were very trendy. And so I was interested in sewing. I was interested very much in writing. And I used to write little stories, and I used to write little poems for my mom and things like that. And I recall really wanting to be a writer. I spent a period of time, it's weird because Crayola used to make these sets. You know, obviously they had crayons and everything, but then they had these, like, architecture sets. And my mother had bought me one of those. So for a short period of time, I was confident that I was going to be an architect because I loved working with that set and designing buildings and, you know, everything that that set kind of took you through. That was a really fun toy for me. But somewhere,
crafty, by the way, so that makes sense.
I like
building
crafts.
Stuff. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
And so, but I kept coming back to writing, and so for a good chunk of maybe, you know, fifth and sixth grade, junior high school, even high school, because I was like on the yearbook, I was editor on the yearbook. I thought that I was going to do journalism or something, But at the same time, I was in, like, really high-level science classes. And so I took, like, AP chemistry and everything. And so when I went to college, I thought, okay, I'm going to be some sort of scientist. I'm going to be a chemist. I thought I was going to work in a lab at a beauty company or something and make cosmetics. But I just couldn't figure out. And I guess this is why it's important to have an advisor and actually utilize your advisor at college, because I couldn't figure out how to get from just taking these chemistry courses and majoring in chemistry to a career that made sense to me. Most people were either doing pharmacy or going into teaching. And so I thought about going into teaching a little bit, which is funny because I remember calling my mom, like, yeah, I'm gonna minor in teaching because education because I'm gonna be a chemistry teacher. And she was really quite devastated.
Oh wow.
And so, yeah. She did not like that at all. And I remember her saying, "What happened to the writing?"
Oh man.
Which is such a funny thing because writing doesn't strike me or anybody as like a steady career. You know?
No, oh my God, I totally needed your mom because my mom was like, "Don't you dare! How are you going to support yourself?" Oh my God, in terms of being a writer. So funny.
She was really turned off by that the idea of me becoming a teacher. It kind of took the wind out of my sail at that time. And so then I kind of was a little bit lost. I was always interested in business, so I started just taking more business courses. And ultimately, I ended up getting a degree in business. But that's a long answer. But, yeah, as a little kid, it was about it was all about creativity for me. I like to create.
That is really cool, and that's what I just love about now, because I just feel like we live in a time where creativity is something that's really encouraged. You know, as a kid, obviously, I knew I wanted to write by the time I was like 10, I knew that I loved news, and I definitely wanted to do that. I just remember reading the USA Today at the table with my father thinking, oh my gosh, to have your byline in the paper is like the coolest thing ever. I just had such revere for it because I was like, you get to tell people like what's happening in the world, and I thought that that was really dope. The other interesting thing though I always think about is I remember as a kid and I would watch The Cosby Show, and I used to love Claire Huxtable. And not because I thought that, you know, about the mom stuff, like, oh, you know, she's such a great mom. I thought it was so badass. She always had badass suits. She always looked sharp.
Her
makeup was impeccable. She was going to work. She had a briefcase. There was something about, like, the business aspect of that. That's what I took from that show. I was like, I'm going to grow up to be like Claire Huxtable, not a lawyer or anything.
Yeah.
But, like, I just associated her with sharpness. I don't know.
And I was just sharp. Like,
yeah, that lady's badass. And so that I just, I don't know. That always clicked for me. And so it's just, but I never thought I would necessarily go into business. I just always thought I would write her and do the news type thing. And now I just feel like we live in such, a time where you can literally make a living doing anything and create and design your own future. And to me, that's like really, really exciting.
It is. It's funny because it's something, that's something I've been thinking about. I've been kind of pondering the past couple of weeks because life is so different today that what we call work, it's kind of abstract, you know? So I think I was having some sort of existential crisis about being a founder and being out here, you know, running this business and everything. And I thought, you know, back in the day, which I'm talking about way back when people, your work was going out to work the land, and then you kind of, your work had direct meaning to your survival, if that makes any sense.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
Oh, yeah. You
went out, you worked the land, you produced food so that you could eat, you know, you maybe produced something that you could trade, barter with somebody else so that you could get some other goods. And it seemed very simple. And so now it's like I'm posting on social media, but I'm working. You know what I mean?
Right.
It is work. But it's a different kind of work than, you know, what our ancestors were doing, you know.
It's so true. And you bring up the social media discussion. I was watching, I think it's Vanity Fair. They do like those one-on-one actor interviews or whatever. And Vanity Fair or Variety. I think it's Variety. And it was the one with Issa Rae and Michael B. Jordan, uh-huh. Which I'm still a little salty that Issa Rae didn't get asked more questions, because I think she is a perfect example of someone who just rocked social media and turned it into this fantastic career.
Oh, absolutely.
But and we're going to get back to that, because Dawn was like the first person who really started telling me about how she gave to Issa's, you know, campaign online and stuff like that. I just thought it was interesting because they started to get into this conversation of, oh my gosh, you make a movie now and the movie company wants you to promote it on social. And mm-hmm. How much of social media, which Dawn and I have talked about this in the past, do you share of yourself? Is
right.
This now just my social where I'm talking about my friends and I'm taking food, you know, photos of my food, or am I supposed to just be promoting Lioness? I constantly struggle on my Instagram because I like to have cooking adventures at home and like record little videos and put them up. But then, no lie, like 2 weeks later, I'm like, delete that shit. And have an Instagram that is constructed, no lie, of like just professional / startup stuff.
Right, but the thing is, we live in a different time today, so people want to get to know you.
Right.
They don't just want to know the brand. They don't want to just know Lioness and this stuffy kind of corporation. They want to know the people behind the brands. And so, I mean, going back to Issa Rae, yeah, I donated to her Kickstarter because I used to watch her web series, Awkward Black Girl, and it was so funny. And she did this Kickstarter campaign. I had never heard of Kickstarter before, but if I donated like $25 or something, I got like a wristband, it's an Awkward Black Girl, and I was like, oh, I feel like I'm a part of this. I donated. So now, because I donated $25 to this woman, I feel like I own her. Like, I'm responsible for all of her success because
her success.
I gave her $25.
Issa, you owe Dawn a check.
With interest, okay?
With interest, so, okay? Make it up to Lioness, though.
But it's been, since that time, I felt connected to her. And so now,
right,
watching her have this big success, I really, you know, I joke and say I'm responsible for her success, but truly, I feel like I'm a part of it. You know what I mean? Because I
right.
was a part of that community that supported her, and I've been following her career ever since. And so that is the type of connection that people want to have with businesses now. And so I think you do have to figure out a way to give some of yourself on social media. And it's up to the individual to figure out how much you want to give. But there's got to be, you know, yeah, Natasha, she's a publisher of Lioness, but she does this crazy cooking experiments on Sunday,
right.
You know?
Right, right.
And that's part of you. And so I think all that's good, and I think that's what people are looking for nowadays.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, because we talk about this all the time, just about, you know, old school workplace traditions and the things that you could talk about and the things that you can't. And now a lot of those things are encouraged in the workplace because some companies are literally being formed around a particular social good that they're trying to do, you know? And
right.
So you might have to have uncomfortable conversations about things that you normally wouldn't talk about because your brand's mission is all about that. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, things are certainly different, and these are things to all think about. you know, as founders, as you're building a company, you're building the company culture, because in some ways, yes, you have, you know, maybe we are talking about social causes and things, which are things that maybe we wouldn't talk about at work before, but there's still the laws that exist are still the laws that exist, sexual harassment laws, and, you know, all those kind of things. And so I think it's important. I think everybody's trying to be cool, trendy, hip, you know, and have these really amazing work environments. But I think also personally, and it could just be me showing my age, I don't want to go to work and have all these political debates and things. I don't want to do
that. Oh, my gosh. A couple of years ago, so this is probably like 2014, okay? So I am a person that I am better at expressing myself through writing. So if Dawn asks me something important, like, hey, what do you think about this? I can give her a little bit of feedback, but I really got to go home and think about it. And I would be on Facebook and somebody would bring up something political, okay? And now I'm sounding off. It may get a little heated. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm supposed to see you at a networking event 2 weeks later where I was basically like, you don't know shit, go read a book. I mean, I didn't say it like that. I ended it with thank you, but I really meant kiss my ass. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
it was
right.
Through the lines. And now I have to see you at a networking event. And maybe we're both fundraising for a local nonprofit. Or,
right.
You know what I'm saying? And it's like,
yeah.
Because people, sometimes we get so involved or you interact in a way that's not always positive on social
right.
media. And you forget, hey, this is still the real world. I still got to go to work on Monday. I might have to call this person's company to do a sponsorship or a partnership. I don't know. And I think we have to draw some lines sometimes, you know?
Right. And so, and those lines are getting really blurred now. And so it's something to think about, you know, as you start building your own company. Yeah, what you want all of that to look like. So, yeah, and I don't think there's any one right answer either. So, yeah.
So true. So true. But I know yesterday Don and I spent time with some students. They come from all around the world to participate in the Envision program at Yale University. It's a 4-week program. Each week they have a different cohort of students. Each cohort is there for a week. And they get thrown into, you know, startup land. They learn about launching a startup from ideation to scale phase and, you know, the customer development and validating your idea a little bit and prototyping. And these kids have some amazing ideas. Yesterday, because this is, what, the 3rd week? Yesterday, I was really impressed because it was the first time since I had been there where I really saw that particular cohort, most of the young women doing the speaking when I went by their table to, like, do their pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was really exciting because usually sometimes when I work with mixed group, you know, co-ed college students, a lot of times it's the guys. And it reminded me of a particular experience you had when you were a judge at a local university and you went to a startup challenge and you were telling us about the fact that the guys are doing all the talking.
Yeah, the guys were doing all the talking. And even if the girl started saying something, she would just fade to the background and the guys would do all the speaking. And so I was purposely saying, purposely asking the girl questions. And I think of maybe the 10 teams that I chatted with, only one girl on one team was really bold and just, she seemed to be the dominating force on that team. And I thought, where are people learning this? I know these are societal things, but it was interesting to me to see these college girls just falling back and literally and figuratively, because they were literally standing behind the boys. So it wasn't just that they weren't speaking up, but they were shrinking and they were moved to the back. And so it was kind of disturbing.
Yeah, and so I remember this one particular table I went to, they were like, their startup idea was, have you ever seen like the little tiny, you know, Tide, T-I-D-E, the brand, how they have like those little pods where you could basically
Tide pods.
Throw them in the wash?
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to connect about 3 pods that were like that, but it was like shower gel, shampoo, and conditioner or something like that. But the pods were biodegradable because I guess the hospitality industry has a huge waste problem when it comes to the plastics of those things.
Oh, okay, okay.
And I forget the numbers that the kids gave me because they did their research, and they were saying, like, you know, this would cut it by, they would say these organizations, like, millions of dollars by creating these little biodegradable things. And then they, you know, started talking about upsells and, you know, other industries that can use them, like hospitals and stuff like that. And so I was just excited. But this one particular young woman, I forget where she was from. I want to say Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Man, she had that pitch down. She was pitching, and it was funny because, you know, sometimes an entrepreneur to get carried away when her team tried to chime in, sometimes it's kind of like, sit down, I got this. like, you're messing it up right now, Craig, be quiet. You know? but it really excited me because I was like, you just don't always see these, you know, with young women in high school age, because I don't know if I said that, but these students were in high school.
Yeah, and there was, I mean, I don't actually participate, I just kind of go in, because they have this event for these division students at a place that Natasha and I co-work out of in Hartford, and so I was there, and I just kind of observe, and it is refreshing to see those girls, the light has not been stamped out of these young ladies, you know,
and
if society is telling them to fall back, they're not listening, and so it's really nice to see that in young people, and these were young people from all different backgrounds and from all over the world, really.
Yeah, and so it just always, stuff like that just reminds me about the work that we're doing and how we want to encourage, you know, more women to use their voice. And but, you know, as a coach, what do you think, when it comes to, like, women using their voices, are there certain things that we need to tap into ourselves in order to kind of get the ovaries up, as I like to say, to step out and start voicing our cares and stuff like that?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you ask 10 different coaches, they'll probably give you 10 different answers. But for me,
yeah,
I think it all comes back to just purpose, clarity of purpose. When you're clear about who you are in the world and what you're working toward, it's so much easier to express an idea and to be authentic about what it is that you're expressing. You know, if you're perpetrating or you're trying to be something because it was like your mom's dream for you, or, you know, somebody told you should do it, or you just think it looks good, or you think it's going to give you social status, you might not sound as firm or as strong when you do speak out, because what you're doing is not really based on anything, and your ideas may not even be based on your own wants, wills, desires, and passions that you have. And so I think when you are clear about your purpose and you're clear about the direction that you're going and you're clear about your passions, it makes it so much easier to kind of stand up and speak out.
Yeah. And so it was like, I remember, so earlier this year we put out our first in-depth white paper we're really excited about, you know, how to close the gender gap in startup land by the year 2021, and Lioness definitely wants to have a role in that. But in that, it was talking about, you know, how do we encourage, you know, women who are launching businesses, because there's something like 9 million women-owned firms in the United States, generating at least $1 million, and the term that people like to use is that they're zebra companies, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do we help those women turn those zebra companies into startups? Well, one of the ways is by encouraging them to actually start thinking big and to start thinking about, okay, how can I scale this thing? And maybe I want to go out by acquisition, or maybe I want to go public, or maybe you don't. Maybe you just want to be a privately held multi-million dollar, almost $1 billion or more company. And,
right.
We talked about the fact that, hey, you might need mentoring or coaching to get there, you know, in terms of using your voice and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's just, it's a funny thing because, you know, many women are not necessarily thinking about launching high-growth startups, but many women are not even thinking about calling themselves an entrepreneur. You know, we come across so many women, you know, at Lioness that they are, you're clearly an entrepreneur. You're doing something entrepreneurial. You're running a business. You're doing something that really nobody has done. And you're still if we say entrepreneur, you're still like, I don't see myself that way. This is just something that I'm doing. So I think even just the coaching, just for you to stand up and say, yes, I'm an entrepreneur. Yes, I'm running a startup. And I think some of that language makes certain women uncomfortable. I'm not sure why, but yeah, absolutely. The coaching and the mentoring so that you can, one, just expand your thinking. A coach helps you to think bigger than you thought on your own, you know. So one of the things that I would do when working with clients is that they come to you with this idea, and I say, okay, we're going to see how big we can make it. And then they get nervous, and they'd be like, oh, no. But we would get really big and then find out that, no, really deep inside them, they did have this huge vision. It was much bigger than what they told me when they came and sat down. And so a coach helps you to see all the angles, to see all the possibilities. And I think many women are launching businesses, and yes, they want to have a successful business, but they never even crossed their mind that it could be a $1 billion company. And I was guilty of that myself, even with coming into Lioness. I wasn't thinking $1 billion company. I was thinking, well, geez, if we can make a nice salary, if I can bring home $100,000 or something, you know what I mean? I wasn't really thinking, I wasn't thinking high growth startup, even though we were here to help people launch and scale high growth startups. I wasn't thinking.
Yeah. Cause sometimes you might talk to a woman, and she might say, oh, my God, like, I would love to be the next Oprah, right? But she doesn't actually attach a dollar value to that, right?
Right.
Or when you think, I want to be the next Oprah, you think about it in terms of publicity-wise. Like, yeah, because I want to be on the Today Show, or I want to be on the cover of InStyle magazine. But you're not thinking
or helping
of, like,
people.
Yeah.
Yeah, or giving away all these cars and stuff. Right.
But you're not thinking
of the,
like,
money.
What are the literal steps that I have to take? Like, how do I actually get from A to Z?
Right. And in order, by the time I'm Oprah, that means that, I mean, how much is Oprah worth? Is a ton of money. I don't know how much. But
Oprah's
that
like,
she
don't
is,
worry, darling.
But she's generating money, which makes people uncomfortable to think about, and to talk about. But I know, I had the honor of interviewing Lisa Nichols. If you don't know Lisa Nichols, she's a coach and an entrepreneur, and she's amazing. But and she has one of the only, I think the only publicly traded coaching business on the New York Stock Exchange, or coaching and training. And when I interviewed her, I asked her about her business acumen, because I said, obviously you must know. Everybody talks about your rags to riches. You were on welfare. Now you're worth, you're making millions of dollars. But no one, asks you about business. You're obviously very smart businesswoman. And she said, no one has ever, you're the first person in all the interviews that she's done that had ever asked her that. And so if no one's asking those questions, because when people interview Oprah, they don't ask Oprah about business.
Nope.
And so if no one's talking about that, then who are young girls modeling in terms of going out and building a business? You know what I'm saying? So then if they say, I want to be the next Lisa Nichols, it's more of, okay, I want to be on TV, or I want to be, coaching or something. But they're not thinking of, or even because they haven't even heard the story of building an amazing business. And so I think even, maybe that's the way that a disservice that media is doing to female successful women, because you're not asking them about the business, but the men, you ask them about the business.
Yeah. And there was a, he's an interviewer, and I cannot think of his name, but I saw him interview Tim Ferriss one time, and this other guy that hangs with Tim Ferriss. Tim Ferriss is an entrepreneur. He's like the human guinea pig, if you don't know. He tests and he tries out all these things, and he reports back to the public on how he did it. He finds the most successful people in the world, finds out how they did what they did, and then he tells everybody else how to do it too. But the guy said, hey, think of when people run into their favorite celebrity. What the first thing that they ask them for is a selfie. If you have 2 minutes with your favorite celebrity, why aren't you asking them something important like, hey, how did you do X, Y, or Z? Or what do you think about X, Y, or Z? To help yourself instead of a stupid selfie. And I thought, yeah!
That's true.
That makes a lot of sense. I have 60 seconds with you. And it's funny because
right.
60 seconds sounds like nothing until it's pitch time. Then you're like, oh, shit, this is still going on. You know, it's a good amount of time.
Yeah.
To get your question in.
You can learn something in a minute. Yeah. And the thing is, if you ask a compelling question, that celebrity might be so shocked that you did that they might turn into 15 minutes or 10 minutes or even, you know, just answering that one question, but it could be something life-changing, you know?
Yeah.
That's a good point.
I just thought, you know what, Natasha, next time you're in a situation, remember to, well, Jadon has a habit, okay, when she sees celebrities. She doesn't ask for selfies, okay? She acts like she knows them. She's like, hey. And the funny thing is, so we went to a Black Film Festival, this was like, what, 2016?
Yeah.
You were saying hi to people like you knew them, and because you were saying it so warmly, like if you were just catching up, they were responding as if they knew you.
But the thing is, I feel like I know these people because I've been watching you on TV. It's not like I'm tricking them. We ran into Tommy from the show Martin.
Yeah.
And, you know, his name was Tommy on the show. His name is Tommy in real life. So when you see him, I was like, hey, Tommy, you know, because I grew up watching that show, like, yes, hey, Tommy. And so,
but he was responding like, hey. I was trailing, still coming back out of, like, an interview that we had did with, like, Roland Martin, I think. And I hear him like, hey, Tom. And he's like, hey. I thought it was like, oh, my God, Dawn ran into somebody she knew in Florida. I looked up. I'm like, oh, my God, that is Tommy from Martin. God bless him and rest his soul. I was like, get out. And
I want to tell you all missed opportunities because Natasha, and this is why I want to tell you, yes, we're entrepreneurs and yes, we work hard, but you got to remember to play hard too because that man wanted to go have drinks with us and everything and that would have been fun, but Natasha had to get to the next interview. So we went to go back and work, but we could have really been hanging out with him.
But that had me done. And again, she saw some actor, I don't know the name of, in the lobby. Same thing. Now we're rushing to go grab a lunch real quick, like between stuff. Again, walk up the street, hey, how's it going? He's like, hey. I look up, and freaking comedian Michael Blackson. I'm like, really?
And that was
so
funny because you could see in his eyes that he wasn't sure if he knew me or not. And so he's like, hey, girl. You know? I'm like, hey, I know you. I know you. That's what's important here.
But that had me dying. But yeah, so totally when it comes to, just thinking big, I just encourage more women entrepreneurs to do that. And that's what obviously we're trying to do at Lioness. Well, one of the things anyway, there was some crazy statistic that we had in that report, you know, such things as, well, we know that our startups are underfunded, right? And, we get 50% less money invested than men. And even with 50% less money, we make 20% more revenue than they do. That's
crazy. It's very crazy. And even with those statistics, it's not really those statistics being released, and I, you know, there was an article, Kevin Leary backed that up just personally, talking about the startups that he's invested in on Shark Tank, that he makes more from women.
Right.
And even with these kind of testimonies and these kind of statistics, it really hasn't caused this rush of people going to invest in women-owned businesses, you know, and so they're still like, what, you know, WTF, you know, like, what's going
Seriously.
On with that? Yeah.
It's crazy. And the other stat was that, you know, when they do get money, okay, so a women-led tech company, as an example, they've been shown to produce a 35% higher return on investment when they actually do have an investment. So it's like,
right.
Why aren't you investing in more women? Clearly, we know how to make the most of the money that you're giving us because you're getting a
right.
higher ROI. So it's just, to me, I always try to play devil's advocate. I believe that it is not just one thing. It's not just about us not getting the money from investors. It's also how many women are actually going in front of investors to pitch.
Right.
Has anybody taught you how to pitch?
Right.
Because a lot of the programs that are available, they're mostly filled with guys. Though I know that's
true.
Changing.
It is changing. Know? And, I mean, but there is a thing. I mean, there's a thing called similarity bias. And, I mean, bias exists in the world. But similarity bias, you know, you have a bias in favor of people that are like you. And that is something that, you know, is a proven thing to exist. And so, you know, if you're a male investor and you're looking at several pitches, you know, even if women are there, you this kid that reminds you of yourself at that age is more somebody that you might bet on than this woman who maybe, you know what I'm saying, who doesn't remind you, don't have as much in common with. And so I'm not saying that it's right, but it's something that's real. And so that's why in the white paper we talked about getting more women behind those investment tables, you know.
Yeah, and so we're going to. We're going to get more women out there.
Simmer down.
High water, dog get your shoes off. We're going right now tonight to round up female entrepreneurs.
Oh, my goodness. You see what I deal with on a daily basis. Calm down.
This gets me so fired up. So this is the type of things that we're going to be talking about here on behalf of all women, because we want to help, you know, women in startup land really rock it. We're going to be sharing more of our experiences, the hard stuff, the funny stuff, the shitty stuff that people have done, and just what we've been learning along the way. Are you looking forward to any particular part of your journey in terms of sharing it here on this podcast?
Oh, when we reach that mountaintop, I'm like, yeah, I'm looking forward to the end, you know.
The money ended. I hear that. A lot of people like to talk about that, because it's all like, you know what, because we really want to serve our customer base, and we do, but we also want to make money. Oprah's maid, okay?
Yeah, and that was something, and I know we're kind of wrapping up, but that was something that in the talk yesterday that you were doing with those kids from Yale, the Yale program, a young man asked the question, you know, I know we're here to help people and to make money, and he asked something about balance. And I thought, you know, you don't have to necessarily want to help people with your business. You know, you may just want to sell a product. You know, maybe your product does fill a void, but you may not be doing this kind of altruistic thing. You may be a person that you're inventive and you're creative, but you want to make money. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Now, if you want to make money at any cost, that's a different conversation. But if you're a person that's like, no, I want to generate wealth for myself, for my family, this is going to be my legacy, and I want to have a good, strong business, and I want to employ people and treat them well, there's nothing wrong with any of that. Yes, I want to do good. I want to help female entrepreneurs, but I want to make money. I'm not going to act like I don't. Because even when I was an employee, I wanted to make money. I would go in every 6 months and say, hey, I would like a raise. And so that's not different just because now I work for myself. I still would like to make a good living. I want to make money, and I want to be successful. And so I think that's what everybody wants, whether we're willing to say that or not, you know, because you need money to live.
Yeah, and I feel like sometimes, depending, and we're going to get into this over the series of these podcasts, sometimes depending on what startup circle that you're, like, talking to or networking in, I mean, some people will just, because I'm in it because for the passion and the love, and we do those things. But I feel like sometimes we forget that, hey, some people are strictly in it for the innovation. Like, I want to take, not necessarily create something that doesn't exist, but I want to take this chair and see how far I can push chair design, right?
Right. So,
like, that element, too. But there are also people who, because think about it like this, like, the iPhone has totally pushed innovation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But to me, I'm like, that's a freaking luxury item.
You know what
I'm trying to say? Because you can still use a regular old plain
a flip phone.
Cell phone. Thank you.
It's just
sometimes
flip
people
phone.
Are just designing luxury items. Jimmy Choo is not saving the world. One shoe at a time.
Right.
What? I'm sorry, Jimmy, if you think you are.
No, but it's a good point. You know, and so, but there, I mean, there's obviously some passion behind that design, and, but these people are also out here making money, because how you're pricing things says, okay, I want to make money, or I want to be a high-end product, and that's what Jimmy Choo has done. And so I think, Yeah, the social impact and social entrepreneurship, that's amazing, but I'm just not here to judge somebody who also says, you know what, I want to go out here and make money, you know?
Yes. Yes. To me, it's just like leaving room for all types of entrepreneurship, because that's, to me, is what is really exciting and cool about the landscape, is that it's open, all types of people are welcome, and I just want to make sure it stays that way and people aren't pushing their ideas on, or their, you know, their philosophies about entrepreneurship.
Right.
Wanting entrepreneurs. Stop.
Yeah, true. And I think, but to answer your question, I am excited to talk about, actually, I think I'm most excited to talk about just some of the real journey of entrepreneurship, because I think what happens is that by the time people become successful, you hear about that it was a struggle, you hear about some of the struggle, but you don't hear about it in a way that makes it that makes you really understand that it really is an up and down journey, and there's a ton of work involved, there's a ton of emotions involved, there's a ton of you know, being confused, not being sure of yourself, but all the while pushing ahead. I mean, there's a lot of different dynamics that happen on this journey, and I'm excited to really talk about those things and talk about them candidly, because you run into so many people, and everybody's faking it till they make it.
Oh, yeah.
And so nobody can just have a sincere conversation about what's going on, and so it makes it harder to find that support and the connection that you need as you are trying to build, because nobody's willing to talk about the stuff that's going wrong, you know?
Oh, yeah. Or the bullshit that's happening in startup land that's keeping some people from being able to blossom and really get their products or themselves out there, too, because there's a lot of blockage going on and people being treated unfairly, I think. And so we want to talk about that stuff, too. I know I'm definitely looking forward to that kind of stuff. I won't always name names, but I will put the names in the caption.
You better not name. Oh, my gosh. We can see what kind of show
Call
this is going to be.
People, if you want another name, I will give. You probably think this episode's about you.
Oh, my gosh. And on that note, we are really excited to have brought you this first episode, you know, on behalf of all women. And, you know, we hope you'll tune in for next time.
Yeah, we out here. We out here, people. See you next time.
Oh, my God. All right, we're signing off.
All right, rock your day, people.